Hello, Scott.
Hello, Rick. How are you?
I'm all right. We're back for 2022.
Yes, it's been an amazing 2021 season. Can it be beaten this year? What do you reckon?
I think, you know, it's going to come close, I think. But let's get into the podcast, shall we? We have a new theme tune. Are you ready for this?
Ooh, okay, go on.
Here we go.
Scott Hughes. Rick Horton.
This is a season like no other.
Unbelievable start from Hamilton.
He's just insane.
Oh, they touched! Verstappen is into the lead! Come on!
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Fairly dramatic, isn't it? Oh, dear. I'm all G'd up now.
I was thinking, you know, people are gonna hear that and go, "Wow, this is these guys are really quite serious and they really know what they're talking about." And then we start, and you're like, very quickly, you're like, "No, they really don't."
Oh, do you know what it feels like for absolutely ever when we did our last podcast and the season last year? But what an absolute belcher. I'm still trying to recover from it a little bit. And I think a lot of the punters that watched it are the same. Aren't they? Still people siding with Team Max or Team Lewis. Still people saying, you know, this needs to happen. This needs to change. I don't ever remember a more controversial end and a more controversial winter of F1 ever, I don't think.
No, and I watched Drive to Survive, which we're going to talk about in more depth shortly, but I watched Drive to Survive, and the overwhelming feeling I got from that was that I felt really sorry for Michael Massey. I mean, he was just trying to get a race finished under green flag conditions, and he was getting all of this bullying from Red Bull and Mercedes, and he was just trying his best. And of course, over the winter, he gets hung out to dry and loses his position as race director.
Yeah, and like you say, I think when you're watching it all unfold and you think, well, the guy's made a decision, whether that be the right or wrong decision, that's open to debate, but he has like 10 to 15 seconds realistically to make a call. And like you say, he's got Red Bull in one ear, he's got Mercedes in the other ear, he's probably got other teams coming at him that we don't know about as well. There's comments from the drivers on their radios, and you know, it was a really tough call. And I think it was lose-lose, because I think if you'd have ended that race under the safety car, you know, the Hamilton fans would have been happy, but it would have been a bit of a damp squib, a bit of a weird ending to that amazing season. And you can see it, can't you? In his head, he's going, we need to have an amazing ending. We need this to be a motor race. You know, what a great season. We need to end on a high. You know, I think the biggest mistake he made is letting the five cars go in between Max and Lewis and not letting the other cars go. I think, you know, if you look at that, maybe red flagged it and gone, right, we're going to red flag, everyone can change tyres, and then we'll do five more laps to end the race. You know, there was a few options he could have taken that would have ended up in hindsight being a better move, but you know, I do feel sorry for him because he did what he thought was right at the time, and he's been the guy that's got thrown under the bus at the end of it all.
Yeah, he has, and I think, you know, we'll be talking about the end of the 2021 season for many, many years to come. And now we move into 2022. Things should be radically different because the car design has changed immensely. We've got the ground effect cars back now. We've seen some radical approaches by certain teams, Mercedes being one of them, without side pods, and we'll come on to that in a few more details soon. You know, it's on paper, it could be any team wins. You know, in the winter testing, we saw Haas top the team sheets on occasion. And you thought, wow, is this going to be the season where Haas could be challenging for race wins? And then you kind of get the idea when they finished the Bahrain test just a couple of days ago that actually the pecking order is probably exactly the same as it always has been.
Yeah, and looking at them, I mean, my first thought was the cars seem so much more beautiful this year. I think they're like curvaceous, aren't they? The rear wings are beautiful on these new cars. The shape of them, they really are. Because I think they were very boxy and square last year, and you had a lot of pieces on the front wing, and it did, you know, there was all these kind of side pod pieces, and it did kind of look a little bit messy. And I think now it's very sculpted, it's very kind of curvy, and just very, very good looking cars. And like you say, fascinating to see the differences between the teams. I think the Ferrari side pods, you know, they're beautiful the way they curve in. I don't normally get this excited about cars the way, but I'm probably looking at these cars and they look amazing. And I text you and said about it the other day, the Ferrari is almost a purple colour. It's the darkest red I can ever remember. Normally they have a really kind of bright red, don't they? And it's really like a dark red. Yeah. But just the cars, I think, just look so sexy this year, and I'm excited for that starting off. But like you say, you know, it does seem that the top teams are kind of up there again. Mercedes claiming that they're struggling. but they've done that for the last couple of years. The Red Bull looks amazing. The Ferrari looks much, much more where Ferrari should be. But like you say, the teams like Haas looking good as well.
You know what? Mercedes are famous for sandbagging when it comes to winter testing, and then they start the first race and they, you know, take pole position and the race win. Lewis Hamilton sort of went out of his way to make a statement after winter testing in Bahrain a couple of days ago. And I've always sat on the fence with Hamilton a little bit because we all know he's a fantastic racing driver. We know that he's won 7 world championships. But I've always never really been his biggest fan. And I've never really been able to figure out why that is. I think there's a bit of arrogance in there, which I suppose as a racing driver you have to have, that I don't like in Hamilton. And there's some other, you know, bits and pieces about the way he goes about his business off track and stuff that I'm not a massive fan of. But here is my thing for 2022. Hamilton makes this statement and he says, listen, we have got a car which ain't going to be winning any races in the early part of the season. There's potential there, but we need to work really hard to understand what the problems are. If you think we're sandbagging, then think again. Now, if Hamilton says that, and it's true, and in the first couple of races this season, we see Mercedes third, fourth, or fifth, then I'll go, you know what, massive respect, my friend. If it's not true, and we rock up at Bahrain this coming weekend, and he's made all these statements, and he puts it on pole and wins the race, he's lost my respect forever.
No, I know what you're saying, yeah. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because, you know, looking at the cars and looking at how they've performed, and you get this a lot from Mercedes. You know, they've done this previously where they're like, yeah, we're not the best car out there. We are, you know, we're looking at a few things. I don't think we're going to be winning races immediately and all that. And then they go and win the first race. So I know exactly what you're saying. It does look like they are struggling more than they have in the last few years. But again, this is Mercedes. This is the same team that struggled a couple of races last year. And within 7 days from race to race, they sorted that issue out and they were ready to go and they were back on the top. And this is the thing, isn't it? They've got the resources, they've got the team, they've got the brains. They're always doing something a little bit different, Mercedes. You know, they had that, I forget what they called it, but where they moved the steering wheel in and out and it turned the wheels in and out. I forget the name of what they called it. But they had that, which was, you know, hugely revolutionary. And we were saying at the time, you know, imagine driving a car and the steering wheel starts coming towards you as a driver. That's bizarre, isn't it? Must feel so strange. But obviously the drivers got their head around that. Then that got banned. This time round, those side pods, and you know, they tend to do these very dramatic, revolutionary things that people either follow or they get banned very quickly. But you know, they are the team to beat. You can't count them out. They've had an amazing run. You know, they've had so many world titles on the bounce, particularly constructors. Obviously, they've missed out a couple of drivers, but they've got most of the they've got all the constructors, haven't they, in the modern era? But it, you know, like you say, they do sandbag and they do kind of play it down, and they are bad for that. And I think even you've seen a few comments from the Red Bull team and Max and people like that, they've kind of gone, yeah, we've sort of been here before and they're always up there. And I think everyone's a bit dubious, aren't they? Everyone thinks Mercedes are going to be good. I said to you on text, if they're kind of best of the rest, you know, if you've got a new top three, if you say Ferrari, Red Bull and Ferrari are pretty level at the top, and then you maybe have McLaren or someone like that in there, and then next is Mercedes. That's going to be an amazing season because then they're on the back foot a little bit and it's not, you know, not the guaranteed winners that we've been used to, and so that would make the season amazing. In theory, on paper, it should all be different, shouldn't it, because of these rule changes, but you can just never count Mercedes out.
No, and like you say, they've got the resources, so if they do start the season on the back foot, then, you know, within a couple of races, they will fix it and they will sort it out, unlike other teams that maybe can't throw as much money and resources at the issue. Of course, though, they are working within the price cap now, so, you know, if Mercedes have a major flaw in the car going into the first few races, then, you know, they can't just throw money at the problem to make it go away as they have been able to in the past, so that's going to be interesting. I think one thing I noticed about the Mercedes in the Bahrain test was Hamilton was struggling a lot with understeer, and there was a lot of locking up going into slower corners, which I thought was quite interesting. And then on the straights, they are the car that I think suffering the most from what they call porpoising, or basically bouncing around. And this is with the ground effect now on these cars. Alfa Romeo really struggled with it. Mercedes, I think, were the worst, though. George Russell bouncing all over the show when he was coming down the main straight in Bahrain. The one team that seems to have sorted that issue out the best, I think, is McLaren, but also at the same time, they don't seem particularly quick, certainly based on the testing, although it is just testing. We don't know which fuel loads the teams are using, but McLaren looks as though They've got a few little nuances that they need to sort out, but certainly the bouncing or the porpoising, they definitely don't have any of that. So that's, you know, that's an interesting thing in itself. And during races, you know, these rules are designed so that cars can follow each other much, much better. And I know that Pat Simmons, I should say, the F1 technical chief, said, listen, yes, that is indeed what is happening. You'd be able to follow a car much more closely, but passing that car is still going to be a challenge because they just haven't been able to sort all of the physics out around how these things work.
Yeah, a lot of rumours as well with the McLaren that they're having braking issues or the brakes are getting too hot, because I saw quite a few comments saying, you know, Lando's got a set on him if he's done 3 days at full pelt and the car's struggling to slow itself down for those entire 3 days. But again, as a racing driver, the last thing you need is to be questioning whether your brakes are going to work. You know, you get the end of a straight doing 190, you hit the brakes, you want them to work. So if you're a bit unsure whether the brakes are going to work or work as well as they should do, that again is going to take a lot of confidence away from the drivers, isn't it? So, and of course, Danny Ric has had COVID, so he's not been testing at all. Hopefully he's going to be there for the first race, but they have got an option on another driver should he not make it. But again, you know, he's had no testing time, he's not been in the car, so that's a massive advantage to Lando, massive disadvantage to Ricciardo. And yeah, like you say, let's wait and see what happens with the McLaren. It's looking decent, but it looks like they have got a lot of teething problems as well.
Yeah, Danny Ric, I mean, it couldn't be more unfortunate, could it? I mean, he was the driver that struggled the most, I think, with switching from teams, going from the Renault to the McLaren last season. It took him at least 6 months to get used to the driving style of that car. And now the rules have changed, and he's got COVID, so he hasn't been able to have much mileage in the new spec car at all. And we know that he sort of struggles with change, doesn't he, Danny Ric? So that's a real blow for him and his chances of starting the new season by hitting the ground running. So it's different. Williams as well, you know, I was talking about which teams we think might be at the back. You know, last year it was Haas, but we know that Haas didn't develop that car at all. They were concentrating on this year for the entire 12 months. They looked pretty quick in testing at times. They don't seem to be the team that's going to be at the back. Williams, I think, looked pretty good. And again, a radical side pod design on that car. But they seem to have reliability issues as well. They had a brake fire, didn't they, in Bahrain?
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, looking at the back of the grid, like you say, I feel like we're looking at maybe Alfa Romeo, and even the Alpine, I don't think, has come out that great in these rule changes. And this is the frustrations. Yeah. Again, you've got drivers like Fernando Alonso that's rejoined that team. They've rebranded from Renault to Alpine, you know, all the hopes on, you know, the rule changes, we're going to be right back at the top, and Fernando's come back expecting a winning car. And, you know, that if that car is as bad as it looks in testing and it's towards the back of the grid, Fernando's going to get very frustrated very quickly. Again, Bottas joined the Alfa Romeo team this year on a long-term contract. He's gone there to kind of rebuild the team and get them back to the top. But again, if you start this new era of rules as the slowest last car, you've got all the work to do to get anywhere near mid-pack, let alone the front. So, you know, whoever it is that starts at the front, and it's looking good for Ferrari, it's looking good for Red Bull, you can't count Mercedes out. McLaren is up there as well. You know, there's a lot of potentials. This is what's fascinating. When you've had this kind of... Normally during testing, you can tell, can't you? You can normally go, right, that's the fastest car without a doubt. This one's not bad. That one's okay. That one's average. It's very hit and miss again this year. And I think until we have that first qualifying session in Bahrain, and again, you know, they start in Bahrain. It's hot there. It's sandy. Some cars don't perform that well in those conditions. So you get, a certain car on pole and you think, right, they're going to win the season then. And then we go to the next race where it's a bit cooler and another car's on pole. And this is the exciting thing about this season is it's just completely up in the air. The one team that do look like they've really got it together from last year's Ferrari. And for me, they've got one of the best driver combos on the grid because they're both young guys. I think Carlos Sainz last year proving that he's every bit as good, if not better, than Charles Leclerc. You know, to sort of get in a car like a Ferrari and beat someone like Charles Leclerc or equal him, you know, that's a great feat. And Carlos has just been brilliant in everything he's been in. He was, you know, good in the Red Bull, brilliant in the McLaren, brilliant now in the Ferrari last year. He's a very, very underrated driver. But I think they've got a beautiful sweet spot of two young, fast drivers. And it looks like they might have nailed the car this year as well.
Yeah, definitely. This Saturday is going to be fascinating, isn't it, when we see the first qualifying session of 2022. And that really is when we know the pecking order of the teams and the drivers, who's got it together, who hasn't, who needs to go back to the drawing board slightly. It's going to be fascinating. Let's talk about Drive to Survive Season 4. Once again this year, I've been in touch with box-to-box films that make Drive to Survive. For some reason, I think I was a major champion of one of their earlier documentaries, which was nothing to do with Formula One. So for some reason, they follow me on Twitter, and they've always been really nice. So when I tweet anything about it, they always retweet it and stuff, which is lovely. And once again this year, I've asked if we could have their executive producer come on the podcast, and they've told me again this year that yes, they will definitely put it on his desk, but apparently it has to go through Netflix for permission or something bizarre, which is crazy. But anyway, we'll see if we can get them on the podcast in the next couple of weeks. Again, season four was great. We knew it would be because we knew that the season we had in Formula One last year was fantastic. I just thought they've nailed it again. You know, they've just the way they grab the drama of the whole thing. It's no wonder that, you know, female viewership in Formula One has gone up by 200%, and they've directly linked that to Drive to Survive because people tune into that and they go, wow, there really is drama here and stuff. And obviously last season was one of the most dramatic we've ever had. Have you watched the entire thing yet? Are you still going working through it?
No, I have. I completed it all on Sunday, and like, I couldn't agree more. Just absolutely brilliant. And I think the best thing about it is you can get someone that's not a Formula One fan. I went on my Instagram and I put a picture of Drive to Survive on, and I said, oh, I'm about to watch this. And I had quite a few people that are not Formula One fans message me back going, do you know what? I've got nothing else to do today. I'm a bit bored. I'm going to watch this, whack it on and give it a go. And that's the thing. I think people that aren't even massive Formula One fans are watching this, and the drama of it, the way it's all kind of put together now, some of it may be over-dramatized, and some of the, you know, some of the rivalries might be sort of semi-created for a bit of drama. But, you know, that's the beauty of it. And I think people really get into it. And some of these people that DM me will then watch the first race of the season because they'll be like, well, I want to know what happens now. I want to know if this guy beats this guy or if this happens or, you know. And when you've got characters like Gunther as well, who's just brilliant. Again, it, like every season we've had, he just makes it, doesn't he? And whenever he pops up on screen, you just know you're going to get some gems out of him. But he's just, what a brilliant guy. He's such a great kind of team boss, I think. He's got that right sort of spirit of, he's hard when he needs to be, but he's also funny and, you know, messes about and swears an unbelievable amount. But I just think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he makes them. But yeah, another great season. It was 10 episodes as well this year, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, and I thought it gave us a real good insight into stuff that we didn't know during the season. For instance, I'm not going to spoil it too much, but the episode that features Nikita Mazepin, my goodness me, he comes across really badly, and it was almost like the team was scared of him and his father with his father's money and stuff. And obviously this season that problem's gone away, not the problem of getting money from sponsors, but obviously because it's a Russian firm, they've stripped the sponsorship off the car, and Nikita Mazepin has been dropped from the team. Now, I thought it was a bit harsh dropping him because he can't help where he's born, but then when you watch the Drive to Survive episode that features him, you think, oh, I think they were probably looking for an excuse to drop him, and when the money wasn't coming anymore, that was an easy option for them to get rid, because he comes across terribly. The other thing that I learned watching was that Hamilton was terrified of catching COVID. A couple of occasions during one of the episodes, he talking about the fans being too close, and he didn't want to get COVID. Also, Lando Norris features in one of the episodes towards the beginning of the series where you can see he's genuinely scared of being outqualified by Daniel Ricciardo, and he gets a real nervy moment because that is exactly what happens in the first race, and he gets outqualified and he's like, oh no, here we go, I need to find a new job, I'm useless and all this sort of stuff. And I thought that was amazing. What Christian really thinks of Toto, well, we kind of knew that anyway, but that came across over the series. And of course Lewis Hamilton beating himself up over that brakes issue at the restart in Baku, and I found it was fascinating. And once again, you know, they edit it in such a way, which has been criticized by some, saying, well, they edit it so that the story's more dramatic than it actually was. But I suppose that is the art of putting something like that together. But yeah, the drama is definitely there. It would have been anyway because of the season we had. But I just love the way Drive to Survive approach it, and I've always been a big fan.
Equally, I'll say as well, I've done things before where I've had a microphone attached to me, and you put the little microphone thing in your pocket, so it's like, you know, wire-free. It's in your pocket and all that. You go and do your bit. And then you forget it's on. And I've literally gone to the toilet before and I've had a wee and I've come back and I've looked down and gone, oh, I've still got my microphone on. And I've said to the sound guy, oh, there'll be a part halfway through that where I go for a wee. Sorry about that. And you forget you're wearing this microphone. So you can see when they have some of these conversations and some of the stuff that's said, you can totally see why they're not sure if they're being filmed or recorded, you know. And this is why they get these amazing moments when they're having these kind of secret conversations. They know that, you know, they're putting the microphones on. They know at the start of the day they're being recorded, but I guarantee you halfway through the day some of them are forgetting those microphones are there and they're saying stuff they wish they hadn't have said, because that's how it works. You just forget and you just have normal conversations. So that's the brilliance of it, I think. But like you say, just so beautifully put together, very, very good. And if you don't even like Formula One, I mean, if you don't like Formula One, you won't be listening to this podcast, but people that don't like Formula One will still like Drive to Survive, and it will 100% get people into Formula One. I think it's the best thing they've done for the sport in years.
Yeah, me too. Okay, we've got a race this coming weekend, Bahrain, the opening Grand Prix of the season. Nicky is back with us from Lights Out. Here's his pre-race stats for this weekend.
Formula One is back. Hamilton can break new records from the start of the season. Alonso will set new longevity records, and British drivers could be in for a good year. Here are the top statistics ahead of the 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix. 98 days after Max Verstappen's title win at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, Formula One returns with the start of a new era at the 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix. This winter break has been one of the shortest in F1 history, and it's the shortest since 1982. This year's Bahrain race will be the first Grand Prix to feature a newly crowned world champion on the grid since Sebastian Vettel first competed as world champion at the 2011 Australian Grand Prix. It will also be the first race to feature a driver using car number 1 since Vettel last used the number at the 2014 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. This weekend, Fernando Alonso will set a new record for the most races between a driver's first and last appearances. The 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix will mark 393 races since his first race start at the 2001 Australian Grand Prix. Alonso currently shares this record with Kimi Raikkonen, but he'll become the outright record holder following the Finn's retirement at the end of the 2021 season. 250 is the number of the weekend at Mercedes. The 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix will mark their 250th appearance as a works team in Formula One. Meanwhile, if Lewis Hamilton scores points, he'll become the first driver to have scored in 250 races. A victory for Hamilton would see him become the first driver in F1 history to have won a race in 16 different seasons, while a podium finish would see him become the second driver, after Michael Schumacher, to record podium finishes in 16 different seasons. 2022 could be a good year for British drivers. If Hamilton, Russell and Norris score 43 points between them this weekend, the nation will become the first to have scored 10,000 points in Formula One. With all three in competitive machinery, we could see an all-British podium at some point this year. The last all-British podium was all the way back in 1968, when Jackie Stewart, Graham Hill and John Surtees finished in the top three together. The last time any nation achieved the feat was almost 40 years ago, in 1983, when French drivers Patrick Tambay, Alain Prost and René Arnoux finished on the podium at the San Marino Grand Prix.
Nice one, Nicky. Don't forget you can follow him, of course, across the race weekends. At Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter. Some amazing stuff, blogs and all sorts of good stuff that you can follow on his Twitter page. He's just some brilliant, brilliant stuff as always. I'm excited about this season, and I'm excited about the fact that we have absolutely no idea who's up there. For me, it's between Red Bull and Ferrari as the top car. I think Mercedes is going to be there in the top three, but potentially behind Red Bull and Ferrari. And I think McLaren's going to be up there, particularly if they can sort this brake issue out. But it's just fascinating, isn't it? Like, you know, him talking about the British points there, potentially going over 10,000 British points, which is incredible, isn't it? But I've also seen some really good, I think I saw like Charles Leclerc was 9-1 to win the world title, and I think 14-1 I saw for Carlos Sainz as well. They are really good odds, because I think that Ferrari is going to be pretty tasty this year.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to the fact that we can see Hamilton and Verstappen battling out on track again. It will be quite refreshing if Mercedes are on the back foot for the opening few races, because it gives, you know, other teams a chance to shine and to be up there on the podium. Predictions then for qualifying, pole position and race win, please.
Pole position, Carlos Sainz.
Wow.
Race win, Max Verstappen.
Wow, okay. I'm going to remain fairly boring on this. I'm going to say Max for pole and Max for the win. But I think the podium could be quite interesting. I think there will definitely be a Ferrari on the top three, and hopefully a McLaren as well. Lando Norris being that McLaren driver, because Danny Ricks, you know, on the back foot going into the opening race. It's going to be fascinating, and we'll be here next week on the podcast to review it all. Thanks so much for listening to the first edition of the 2022 season. It's great to have you back with us. Please tell as many friends as you can about Two Soft Compounds, and we'll be back to do it all again next week.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.